Before I start the interview, I did want to make note that the audio quality was not the best, but this was my only opportunity to interview Carrie Kennedy. My guest today is Carrie Kennedy, daughter of Robert F. Kennedy and author of Robert F. Kennedy, Ripples of Hope. 50 years after his death, his legacy lives on, and Carrie's conversations with heads of state, business leaders, influencers, and activists are chronicled in Ripples of Hope. Welcome to the show, Carrie.
It's great to be on with you today.
You were just, I believe, 8 years old when your father died?
Yes. My father was very present as a father. He was not a Don Draper 60s type of dad. And he, he loved us kids, and we always felt that we were his top priority. I remember when we would get into battles, and I had 7 brothers and 3 sisters, so plenty of battles in our house. He always followed the same pattern. One day, I was playing World War II with my brother Michael in our treehouse, and Michael was the Americans in the upper branches throwing magnolia pods with hand grenades that feel like rocks when they hit your head down at me, the doomed Germans trying to take over the fort.
Mm-hmm.
So I took a few hits too many, and I ran into my father and in our house, and I jumped in his arms and said, "You're throwing rocks at me." And he said, "Well, go get Michael." And Michael came up, and he said, "No, Michael, you be quiet, and Carrie, you tell your side of the whole sorry saga." And I said, "Now, Carrie, you have to be quiet, and Michael tells his side." So I don't remember all the details, but I remember it was irritating. And then we had to kiss and make up and go to our rooms and read for an hour. And I think the message he had for the kids was the message he had for our country, which is you have to have a system of justice that everybody believes in. Mm-hmm. And you need peace. It's not something you can just pray for, but we're all responsible for creating it. Mm-hmm. And, you need to stop thinking of adversaries as enemies and start thinking about them as your brothers and sisters. And you need to go to your room and read for an hour.
Wow. And that brings me really to one of the crux of the issues right now is why is it so important to get your father's name and legacy out into the world right now?
Well, I think our country was terribly divided in 68, and it hasn't been that divided since then as it is now. And mm-hmm. I think that when I talk to my friends, they feel dismayed reading the papers and seeing what's going on both in our country and around the world. They feel so demoralized by our leadership today. And I think, Payne 1968 was really focused on 2 things, addressing poverty and healing divisions. And We never address the poverty issues that he talked about.
Mm-hmm.
We never address the poverty issues. We never address them among farm workers and the poorest Latinos and immigrants. And that's part of the division that we're feeling today. The leftover failure to address those issues. But also, he said, peace and justice and compassion towards those who suffer. That's what the United States should stand for. And that's what I'll do if I'm elected president of the United States.
Yeah.
I think that we need to hear today. I think people are yearning for someone to call forth the better angels of our nature.
Mm.
And try and imagine a politician standing up today and saying, peace, justice, and compassion towards those who suffer. That's what the United States.
So I think one of the big questions right now is that there is such a division as to liberals and conservatives, Republican, Democrat. When you talk about trying to get people together, you really have to kind of sort of walk a middle road or at least have people try to understand. And it sounds like, especially with that story you told about you and your brother, that your dad did try that. That's what he was speaking to.
Well, he not only tried it, but he really succeeded. And a good example of this is Indiana. So in 1968, he had to win Indiana. And Indiana was a state that was 90% white, 10% African American, and he ended up with 90% of the African American vote. The white vote primary had gone overwhelmingly for George Wallace just 4 years earlier.
Right.
There were two in the state, and both of them, the publishers or journalists, that if you cover Robert Kennedy and say anything good about him, you're going to be fired that same day. So he had no statewide coverage of his campaign. And then he was against McCarthy in the primary, so he was going to split the anti-war vote. And President Johnson had gotten the governor of Indiana to run in the primary as well. It was impossible to win. And my father spent a lot of time talking to small business owners and farmers, but he spent a lot of time talking to them. And then Dr. King died. And Daddy went and spoke to primarily African in the largest African-American district of Indianapolis. And the people in the front of the crowd had been waiting for hours, so they hadn't heard about Dr. King. The people in the back of the crowd had heard the news, and they came with bicycle chains and Molotov cocktails, and they were ready to riot.
Mm-hmm.
And my father said to them, for those of you who are angry and feeling hatred as a result of this act, the injustice of this act, I can say I know that feeling because I had my own family killed. Now try and imagine a politician standing up in front of a crowd that's ready to riot and saying, I understand your feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But he did that. And then he said, what we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but a sense of justice,
mm-hmm,
and a sense of compassion towards those who suffer, white or they're black. And as a result of that, Indianapolis remained peaceful that night while 125 cities across our country started to burn.
Hmm.
People across Indiana saw that, and they didn't agree with him on all of his race relations.
Mm-hmm.
But they saw that he was somebody who could bring people together, and they voted for him in the primary as a result. That's what we need. And that's not just a winning formula as a politician, but that's what we need in our country and what we need in our world. We need that voice today.
And you interviewed people who see themselves through the lens of your father, including Soledad O'Brien. Give us a glimpse of what her thoughts were.
Well, I love talking to Soledad because, and one of the great things in this book, because you learn about Bobby Kennedy, but you also learn a lot about these famous people who you think you already know. So Soledad said that her father was white and Australian, and her mother was Puerto Rican of African descent. They were not allowed to get married to each other because they were two different races. Her parents went to Washington, D.C., got married, and moved to live. And so she talks in America, and she has worked so hard, Soledad, on what it's like to be black in America, what it's like to be Latino in America, what it's like to be poor in our country. And she had a very a dark view of what our future is because of our failure conditions
and
in our country.
What seems odd is we voted for President Barack Obama. So you would think that we had made some steps, but it didn't turn out that way.
I mean, steps. If you feel like we haven't made any steps, go just watch a couple of the first episodes of Mad Men, and you'll see.
Yeah, that's true.
It would be a woman, what it was like to be African-American, and also, incidentally, how difficult it was to be a man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a white, even a privileged white man under those circumstances, the alcoholism, the meaninglessness,
mm-hmm,
the lack of of core values that are depicted in that kind of dark vision of American life at that time. But I think that we've made a lot of progress, but we're in a dangerous period. Mm-hmm. And we have a very dangerous leader who is appealing to our anger and our hatred and our fear in order to enhance his own power and enhance the power of oil companies and of polluters and people who are really going to make our future very, very difficult and very grim. So this book really interviews a wide span of people, and you learn a lot about them, and it's kind of fun to, it's a fun read.
It is indeed. And you, from Shirley MacLaine to Tony Bennett, Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, what or who stands out to you in your interviews?
Well, I love, you know, you mentioned Tony Bennett. I love talking to him. He talked about growing up in poverty in Queens, and his mother would take in sewing, and she'd go quality dress, she'd throw it on the floor and say, she'd say, I don't do low quality work. And so when he became a singer, he refused to do popular songs just because they would make money, and he would say, I don't do any work, I'm only going to do classical, wonderful songs that are going to last through the ages, which is pretty amazing, because now you think about Tony Bennett, and all of his songs are songs we've been singing for the last 50 years. Yeah. But he also tells this amazing story about being a pacifist, and so he was inducted into the Army in World War II. They sent him to the German front during the Battle of the Bulge. He refused to take up a gun, because he's a pacifist.
Mm-hmm.
And happily, the Allies won that battle. He marches into the next town. He comes across a Nazi prison camp, and he frees all the Nazis. I mean, frees all the prisoners of war. How about that? And then he talks about Selma and marching with Dr. King and working with Harry Belafonte and then campaigning with Mike. And then they ask him to sing in the Super Bowl.
It's amazing.
And he will not sing any song that he feels is low quality, and so he won't sing any song that glorifies war. And he sings America the Beautiful instead of the Star-Spangled Banner. Now, you can't think of a greater patriot than Tony Bennett, somebody who loves our country, personifies what our country is about. And yet he's more complex than I think most people would know before they read the book.
Right. Yes. Well, and this is the book we're talking about, Robert F. Kennedy, Ripples of Hope. It is written by Carrie Kennedy. She has interviewed a number of people from different walks of life. And what is your best hope for Ripples of Hope?
Well, I hope that the next generation's book, and I hope that people pick it up and are in their hearts of who we are when we are at our best. And I hope it gets people to get out there and help create a more just and peaceful country, a just and peaceful world.
Carrie, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for also what your father did and the legacy he's left behind. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.